Okay. So I just said that the fine element discretization has been implemented in the operational version of the model, and meanwhile we have done some more diagnostics, and I will present some of these diagnostics on the scheme, which might be of interest to this audience here. And then the second part of the talk, I will show some results from some tests I did with cubic spline interpolation in the vertical advection. Mainly results showing the doing the advection in this way for ozone. The motivation for this test was very simple, because we are having a cubic finite element discretization in the vertical. We have everything set up to do cubic spline interpolation in the vertical. It is just an additional solving of a three diagonal matrix. So we just sort of let's see whether we can see some benefits from using this spline interpolation in the vertical. Okay, before I start with the finite element discretization, I would just briefly outline the SMWF model for people who are not familiar with it. It is an hydrostatic model. That's why we have only horizontal momentum equations. We use semi Lagrangian for the advection. That's why the equations are already written in advective form. And there were the thermodynamic equation. We use virtual temperature there. The humidity equation, and we also have ozone in the model. Ozone is not interacting really with the dynamics of the model through the radiation scheme. It is just passively in the model with a very simple chemistry. The tests I will show are without chemistry to look at the conservation of ozone. The continuity equation we use in integrated form. So from the continuity equation, we derive an expression for the vertical velocity, which is needed in the thermodynamic equation, and an expression for eta dot, which is, eta is our vertical coordinate. Eta dot is the vertical velocity we need for the semi-Lagrangian advection. And then, of course, we derive a prognostic equation for the surface pressure, actually the logarithm of the surface pressure from the continuity equation. And this set of equations are then, of course, complemented by the hydrostatic equation integral in the vertical to get the geopotential, which is then needed in the momentum equation. In the horizontal, we use a spectral transform method, so it's a spectral model, and it is discretized on a linear Gaussian grid in triangular truncation. And in the vertical, we used up to recently a finite difference scheme, the scheme of Simmons and Burridge, in a Lorentz staggering of the variables. I think that's about all the information you need to know about the model. So this finite difference scheme of Simmons and Burridge, we wanted to replace with something more accurate, because it is just first order accurate in between the nodes. It's only first order accurate with non-uniform spacing of levels. That's why we tried a finite element discretization. And we implemented this only in the semi-Lagrangian framework, because in that case it is fairly easy to do, because in that case we have only integrals to evaluate in the vertical as non-local operations. No derivatives. The derivatives are in the advection, which is done in the semi-Lagrangian way. So we derive an integral operator in finite element representation, but we do all the products in physical space. Just the non-local operation, which is the integral, we do in finite element representation. We don't deploy any staggering of variables. Not even pressure is on a different set of levels. So all variables are kept on the same set of levels. This is a bit similar to the Lorentz staggering, but in the Lorentz staggering, the pressure is on the different set of levels and the vertical velocity. But we keep all variables on the same set of levels. We have two versions of the finite element discretization. One is based on linear and the other one on cubic functions with compact support, means B-spline functions. Okay, just quickly how we derive the integral operator in finite element representation. So what we have is the general problem of integrating a function from 0 to x and obtain an integral as a function of x. So we expand the integrand and the integral in terms of sets of linearly independent functions with compact support. We call the basis for expanding the integrand E and the one for the integral D. And then we have this approximation to the integral. And if we use standard Galerkin method with the set of D functions as test functions, so the basis functions for the integral we use as test functions, then we can get a set of equations for all J values in this form, where this is can be written in a matrix form, which is it's the overlap over the test functions for the integrand, the integral. So it is a mass matrix. We call it A, and this matrix here, which includes the integration over the basis function for the integrand, we call B. And then we by inverting A, we get the coefficients of the integral in finite element space by knowing the coefficients of the integrand via this expression. But of course, we have given the function f as discrete values on the n levels we have in the model. And we want to compute f only on the discrete levels and also at the surface. And now we need then a relationship between the discrete values in physical space and the coefficients, expansion coefficients in finite element space. And this is given by the condition that the approximation to the function at the levels is identical to the functional values given on the level. So this is the spline condition, that the spline interpolation goes through the functional values on the node. And these matrices S are actually just the basis functions evaluated at the nodes. And if we have those, and they are very simple for linear elements, they are basically identity matrix, unity matrices, while for the cubic spline, they are three diagonal matrices. It's basically this operator is just a spline interpolation, it's analogous to a spline interpolation. And then if we use those matrices, we can write the integral in on the levels in the discrete form as a matrix operation on the values of the integrand on the levels. And this matrix here is our integration matrix in finite element representation, and it takes us directly from the values of the function we want to integrate on levels to the integral on levels. So it is not like a spectral transform method where we really go to spectral space and back, and this de facto we go to spectral space and back, but it's all incorporated in one matrix. And this is a full matrix. We store it. It's just we have just 60 vertical levels, so it's not a big deal to store that matrix. And we apply it as a full matrix multiplication. So we don't try to exploit the banded structure of these S matrices and of well, A minus 1 is a full matrix, B is a triangular matrix. But we just make a full matrix out of it and apply that. So what we have to do is just replace everywhere where we have a vertical integral in the model this sum over finite differences by a matrix multiplication. This is the basis for the cubic version of the finite element scheme. So we have cubic B splines, which are they are piecewise cubic polynomials set together over this function stretches over four intervals. And in these B splines, the smooth properties of a spline interpolation are incorporated. So spline interpolation is continuous at the nodes. The first derivative and the second derivative are also continuous at the nodes. And that is all incorporated in the basis function. That's the nice thing about using B splines. So here we have the set of basis functions which we use to expand the integrand, and here the set for the integral. And we don't use any staggering between the two sets. So the function dn minus 1 is exactly en minus 1. It's not shifted by half a level or by a level or. So they are identical. The only difference is here at the top because we want to that the integral where we start to integrate is zero. It's a definite integral, and we want this integration constant there to be zero. That's why we have to modify the basis functions so that this boundary condition is incorporated in the basis functions, and that all the d's which cover reach to that point at zero at the top of the model, at the top of the atmosphere. And in order to get these modified D's, what I did is was just take a linear combination of E minus 1 with E 0 to get D 0, and E minus 1 with E 1 to get D 1, and so on. Making linear combination such that the sum is zero at the top of the model. Although this plot is in regular spacing, we apply this in non-regular spacing. In regular spacing, there are analytical expressions for the B splines. In non-regular spacing, one has to compute them, but it's not a big problem. For the linear version of the scheme, we use the head functions like everybody else. And again, no staggering. The only thing I want to mention here is that it's very simple here in this set to enforce this condition that the integral at the top is zero by just dropping this one basis function in zero, which peaks at the top. Just drop it, and then we have this, the set with the D functions for the integral. A little test to test the accuracy, a very simple test to test the accuracy of the finite element scheme. We just did a numerical integration of a sine function for different resolutions with equidistant space nodes, n of them. And since we have the analytical integral of this function, we can use that as the truth. And we are looking at the maximum of the error between the numerical integral minus the analytical and divided by the analytical, and the values are given in percent. And it is not the integral from the top to a level, it is the integral over a layer, what we're looking here. And I have here the different schemes, the operational finite difference scheme, or the old operational finite difference scheme, the linear finite element scheme, the cubic finite element scheme, and a scheme which I call cubic collocation. I don't know whether that's the right name for it in the mathematical sense, but what it is just taking a cubic spline interpolation of your function you want to integrate, and do the integration then analytically on the spline approximate. Well, we have tested, computed the errors for different, for a lot more different number of levels. I listed here only two, just to give an idea of the magnitude of the errors. And we could estimate the order of the schemes for the finite difference scheme to be order 2. The linear finite element scheme is order 4, the cubic 8. And the cubic collocation, so this spline interpolation and integration over it, is also order 4 and has very similar errors to the linear finite element scheme. And this estimated orders, they agree fairly well, or they agree well with the order that is given in textbooks for solving differential equations with finite elements. And the order is going with twice the degree of the polynomial used in the basis functions plus 1. And so this simple test agrees with this expression. And this is, of course, only valid on the nodes. And it is referred to as superconvergence, because in between the nodes, if I'm not wrong, it is only k plus 1, the order of the scheme. The interesting thing is if one compares the cubic collocation with the linear finite elements, it is of the same order, although the basis function here is has a degree of 2 higher than here. But by using the Galerkin method, and we get superconvergence, using just linear basis function gives us the same accuracy as using cubic basis functions, but without doing the Galerkin procedure. We also did some linear normal mode analysis. Well, oh my God, no. Okay, in which case I have to speed it up, or else I can't show any results. Very simple normal mode analysis. Actually, this comes out of our semi-implicit scheme. We have to do it on a routine basis. And then we get the linear divergence equation, which has this operator gamma hat in there, which is the vertical structure operator. And it is given by those matrices, gamma hat and tau hat and nu hat. And they are defined in this way. So the basic thing is it combines all the vertical integrals we have to do in the model. So this, to look at the eigenvalues and the eigenvectors of this matrix gamma is a good candidate to assess the changes assess the changes that come with changes in the vertical integration, so the accuracy. And the eigenvalues of this matrix gamma are proportional to the square of the gravity wave speed. So it is just gravity waves which are solutions of this gamma in the form we have it here. Results from this, so we computed the eigenvalues of this matrix for different schemes at different equidistant space levels in LNP, so in logarithm of the pressure. So here I just show for 50 levels, 100 levels, and 1,000 levels. At 1,000 levels, all the different schemes have converged, and the result, at least over this number of modes which are plotted in this diagram doesn't change anymore with increasing number of levels. So the different schemes, we have the finite difference scheme in Lorentz arrangements, which was our old operational finite difference scheme, the Simons and Burry scheme. We have the linear finite elements, the cubic finite elements, and the Chanet-Phillips finite difference scheme. So finite difference scheme in Chanet-Phillips arrangement. And what you can see here is that the eigenmodes of the Chanet-Phillips scheme, they are faster than, I wanted to say, stress, of course, we use the result for 1,000 levels as the truth. We don't have an analytic solution, so we use that as the truth. And the Chanet-Phillips eigenvalues are larger than the truth. And so the waves are moving ahead. They are faster than the analytic solution. While in Lorentz staggering, especially with the finite difference scheme, the waves are slower, and mainly with the limit of the resolution. So the very slow waves have a very large error in the phase speed. The finite element schemes improve on that, and they are very good in this range. And then, of course, this is a similar staggering. It's a Lorentz staggering, although there's no staggering at all, but that is very similar to Lorentz staggering. So they have this decay, rapid decay in the phase speed for modes with large mode numbers. But what I would like to stress is the accuracy of the finite element schemes. The number of modes which have an error smaller than 1% for N100, compared with the truth, of course, which is N1000, is for the cubic finite elements, the first 70 modes have eigenvalues which are better than 1%, have a smaller error than 1%. And for the linear finite elements, it's 47. It's only 17 and 13, 17 for the Chanet-Phillips scheme, and only 13 for the finite difference scheme in Lorentz arrangement. If we change the vertical, these tests were done with equidistant spacing in LMP. If we have a more realistic spacing of the levels, this spacing the levels equidistantly in height, basically, is very good to resolve structures in the stratosphere because you bunch all the levels in the stratosphere. Of course, in a normal weather prediction model, you want to have a lot of layers in the boundary layer to have a good resolution there. So the vertical resolution which we employ at ECMWF now is 60 levels. The resolution is 60 with 60 levels. The top is at 0.1 hectopascal. Oh, that's wrong, at 0.1 hectopascal, about 64 kilometers. We have 25 levels in the stratosphere. Well, what is important is that we have very dense spacing in the boundary layer and in the troposphere. We start with a layer of 20 meters, layer thickness of 20 meters, and around the tropopause, which is somewhere here. Level 25, we have about 1 kilometer layer thickness and so on. And if we compute the normal modes in this resolution and not in the previous case with equidistant LMP, then the picture looks a bit different. So especially the Chanet-Phillips eigenvalues look different from before. Before they were all larger than the reference curve, and now they are smaller for large mode numbers. Probably because they are not resolved very well anymore. So the Chanet-Phillips eigenvalues are more similar to the behavior of the finite differences in Lorentz grid and of the linear and cubic finite elements. The important thing here is, for us at least, is that the smallest eigenvalue has increased by an order of magnitude, going from the finite difference scheme in Lorentz staggering to the cubic finite elements. So this is important because if you want to use the inverse of this operator, then you have to weigh the weights you give to the different spectral components is 1/ the eigenvalue. So you weigh those components very heavily, which have a noisy structure in the stratosphere, and that is giving them noisy fields in temperature. And just this 1 order of magnitude increase in the eigenvalues was enough, or was essential, to make a scheme work, which Mike Cullen was trying out at DCMWF to use potential vorticity as a control variable in the four-dimensional variational simulation, where he has to invert this matrix. There's a striking difference in the eigenmodes for large numbers between the different schemes. And so this is eigenmode number 50. And the eigenvector obtained with the finite difference scheme in Lorentz grid has large grid oscillations in the stratosphere, which are poorly resolved. And undesirable, actually, because if you have a model with eigenvectors like this, you can expect quite a noisy temperature field or so in the stratosphere. The Chanet-Phillips eigenvectors, they are almost zero in this range. They have significant amplitude only in the bottom part of the model. And the linear finite elements reduces these oscillations a bit, and the cubic even more. So from this, we would guess that running the model with cubic finite elements and comparing it with finite differences in the Lorentz aggregate should be a smoother behavior. The Lorentz grid has this computational mode, which is a grid wave, which is not there in the Chanet-Phillips staggering by construction. So this is I have already just to test this, whether we have a smoother field when we use the finite element scheme versus the finite difference scheme in Lorentz staggering, we did the following very simple experiment. We used a dynamical core to start from an atmosphere at rest with no rotation and flat orography, and we heat it at every time step only in one level. We added a temperature tendency in order to see whether we can excite this computational mode or a grid wave structure in temperature in the two models, and see how the two models react on this. And here is the result. It's a temperature profile. It is T minus the 250K from which we started. And you can see that the finite differences in Lorentz staggering has a lot larger grid oscillations than the cubic finite elements at the end of this run. Another piece of improvement, what we saw with the finite element scheme, is it improves the vertical transport in the lower stratosphere and around the troposphere, and that is beneficial for the ozone conservation. Well, in this MWF model, conservation is not enforced. So we have quite a strong decrease in total ozone, well, in the global ozone. It is plotted here in percent. Over a range of 60 days, we lose about almost 4% with the finite difference scheme in Lorentz staggering. With the finite element scheme, the loss is halved. Okay, and now I don't know. Maybe I should skip this then. But.